want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. Uncover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to the Geocaching Podcast, episode 411, recorded live on July 29th, 2015. I'm your host, Head Hard Hat, with
Steven's at infinitum
and Taz427.
You can join our chat room and watch our live video stream, plus participate with us as we record this episode. All this and more can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. Be sure to contact us via our voicemail line at 63031-VOICE, and also find us on Twitter at geocachingpodcast.com/Twitter, and Facebook at geocachingpodcast.com/Facebook. This episode is sponsored by cache-advance.com for all your geocaching needs. Cache-advance.com. Go find it. All right, so I'm not quite sure where Mr. Burks is. Did anybody get to check out if he actually made it to GeoGearheads last week? He was surprised and or startled when we announced that in our podcast roundup that he was going to be one of the guest hosts, and he went, "I am?" So I'm kind of curious if he made it or not. For some reason, he's not here, and I'm sure it's baseball related. So either that or the revenge of Windows 10 has moved over to Mac. Whatever that is. And yes, I still say this is the worst apocalypse ever when it comes to Windows 10, because I've got two computers. I haven't tried my wife's yet, but the two main computers here, I checked into the history for the updates, and guess what? They were tried twice to go to Windows 10 and failed. So, yeah, both of them.
You didn't have to worry about it.
No, actually, to me, I kind of think of it. Actually, speaking of Scott, I actually got a text from him earlier today in big text, all capitals. He wrote Windows. So I wrote back and told him and said, "Yeah, by the way, not working, and the world's going to come to a screeching halt just any minute." And I think the nice thing about this is that at least if it failed, it wasn't like, okay, I'm going to get halfway through the upgrade and then fail and everything's completely dead. It was in the initial checks to see if everything – it said your computer's fine, everything's up to date, blah, blah, blah. But when it actually started and tried to turn on some services and do some stuff, it had a hairy conniption fit. And apparently I am not the only one by far. Matter of fact, I have yet to find anybody that says that it actually worked.
I do have a friend who's in the IT business who is saying that it's working great for him and is trying to convince all of us to join him in upgrading. And I'm like, yeah, no, I'll wait a month for at least all the warts to show up and be worked out. And once the warts are worked out, I'll upgrade, but not before then.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing about this, the way they're putting a spin on this now, because they've updated their website for this, and they said, hey, by the way, we're doing this in waves, which I can understand. We don't want to take down the entire internet. But if it doesn't work, it may take weeks before we actually start this up with everybody, which to me dictates in IT speak, lots of stuff went wrong, and it's going to take this long for us to figure this out and get things going so that you can actually do your update. So we shall see. So, yeah, at least the world didn't come to a crashing halt yet. But I'm hearing a whole lot more failures than I'm hearing of successes with it. So interesting stuff, and I dragged that along because really I had this week. It's been so blustery hot that I there's no way the heat index. Matter of fact, the heat index I looked over through the first week of August. So we've got this week into the first week of August, the heat index over most of the days there is going to be over 110.
No.
And June apparently was the hottest month on the entire planet ever. So I, for the people that are going north or south or wherever you're living to the cooler climates to go geocaching, I commend you. But it's just, it's you know, blistering hot. That's all I've really got this week. You guys, what, Corey, you got anything going on?
You know, I was able to cache a little bit before we sent the girls home, just to get them out on one last big bang. You know, I sent my three foster girls home. It was bittersweet, so I was able to spend some caching time with them. So it was, you know, all in all a good week. It wasn't much. I think it was like three or four caches this week, but definitely a lot, a larger change than what I've been seeing, which was, you know, like zero.
I'm actually feeling bad right now because I'm back like two souvenirs that I've got to get going to get caught up. And the third one opens up July 31st, which is in a couple days. And it's like, I got to get on the groove. I just don't want to disintegrate into a puff of smoke doing it.
Yeah, see, we've actually got ours planned at the CETA we're doing on the 22nd of August. We've got it's real close to an underwater cache.
Ooh.
After the CETA, there's a meet and greet, and after the meet and greet, we're all going to get together and go swimming and see if we can get this underwater cache. So.
Wow. I think the underwater caches here in North Carolina is going to be more and more interesting because they are finding in Falls Lake, which is the main actual water reservoir for the entire Raleigh area, they have found several huge gators. So nice. the population is moving north. And I don't know if it's because it's warmer or how what are the climate or people are dropping them off and they're getting bigger. But underwater caches, you got to be a little more careful in the lakes now than you were.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that here. And we actually had a number of gators go down to the ocean side. I mean, they were down in the Gulf of Mexico. And gators don't like salt water. They get to about the brackish part of the water, and then they don't go any further. But they were down in the Gulf. You'd see them with the surf coming in and stuff in the Gulf, and it's like, yeah, that's not a good sign.
Times are changing, but you did get into some heavy stuff there, didn't you?
Oh yeah, I hit it pretty hot and heavy, and the heat and air, heavy air, hit me back. yeah, I was on the way up to Austin, and I called a friend before I went up there and see if I wanted to meet in Brenham, Texas, which is about maybe 45 minutes outside of Houston, because there's a geo tour there. And we did 25 caches. Actually, we did a little bit more than 25 caches, but 25 points towards the geo tour itself, and then so I'll be getting a coin for that. And then I grabbed several more on the way up to Austin, including a couple that were only one of them was on my alphanumeric challenge. I thought two of them were going to be in there, but big guy in Texas, who's GX Proxy, actually tricked me. She had put a caching name. You know how you can do the fake caching name in
yes.
there? And it was three, da 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 da. I needed the number three in there. And then after I logged it and went through this office, like I clicked on it, I was like, oh, that's a big guy in Texas. Dang it, she got me. But yeah, GX Proxy, yeah. But it was a great cache. It was a little bird cage. With a pill bottle in it hanging in a cedar tree. So it was a pretty cool cache.
Yep. I'm sure there's a joke in there somewhere. I just can't come up with it right now.
Yeah. And then I also picked up one of my last four Jazzmeres. So I picked up September 2001 when I was in Austin.
That's awesome. Good, good stuff. All right, well, let's move on. We've got the podcast roundup, letting our viewers know what's going on in the geocaching podcasting community. And what's coming up this week on GeoGearheads is episode 187, Gadget Caches 2. WV Tim returns to talk again about gadget caches. And on the GeoSnippets Reboot podcast tomorrow on Thursday, we're going to be talking about path tag graphics. A lot of people have been calling in saying, I don't know how to do simple graphic techniques. What's a layer? How do you make those curved text? All the simple stuff that, well, some simple if you've been working on it for 15 years, and some not so easy. So we're going to go over a lot of the basics so that if you wanted to make your own path tag, some ideas that you can go through and some techniques to do to design your own path tag and go from there, because sometimes people are, that's where they're stuck. They don't want somebody else to make it for them or don't know how to get a hold of somebody to make it for with them, and yet they don't know how to do it themselves. So hopefully this will be a cool thing to go over. All right. Finally, folks, we really appreciate everything that you do for the geocaching podcast. Quite frankly, we're heading towards the latter part of the year now, and we need some monies. So if you would be so kind, either through our PayPal or through our Patreon programs, if you go to the right side of geocachingpodcast.com, you'll see the graphics for either PayPal or Patreon. Become a contributing member for the show. We would greatly appreciate it, because that literally helps keep the lights on and pays for all the stuff that's going on with what it takes to keep a podcast going and coming out to you each and every week. We greatly appreciate the ones that are helping out right now, and we also ask for the everybody else to help, because literally the big bills come at the end of the year. So again, thank you so much for becoming a patron for our show. All right, Mr. Corey, let me see if I can find it on here. Are you ready? We got some news.
I can be ready.
All right. I'll give you a half a second. Let me know when you're ready. And I will.
The news.
Details. And I'll hit the button here. I love it when you do that. I'm going to hit the button here. We'll move on, and that'll fill it. I'll give you an extra 30 seconds, 20 seconds here. Here we go.
All right. Go ahead. Go ahead.
The news.
News. And I didn't know we had news, but we have news now.
All right.
So the news is from Dave Self, aka Dudley Grunt. OCNA, that is Open Caching North America, is having their fifth anniversary contest to celebrate the fifth anniversary of Open Caching North America at www.opencaching.us. You got to remember that US in there. On August 18th and the month of International Geocaching Day on August 15th, we will be running a contest for the entire month of August, which encourages people to find and hide caches on the open caching site. Tons of prizes to be given away. Read more about it on the Open Caching North America blog, and we will have that link in the show notes.
Awesome. Yes, we will. No geocaching question of the day. Lisa didn't send one in.
Oh, Lisa.
Well, she's a busy lady, so that's how that goes. So we will see what we have next week for that. So let's move right into the subject of tonight, which is a geocaching podcast episode 411. Create geocache suggestions. So basically giving tips and suggestions that make creative geocaches, no matter what the size or difficulty is. And I think nowadays when somebody says creative geocaches, and I think we've had such a push this year with West Virginia Tim and gadget caches, a creative cache does not necessarily have to be a gadget cache. Creative caches can be just that. They are very creative ideas, and it doesn't necessarily have to have a mechanical or an extravagant way of retracting the log or that type of stuff. So what I asked the host to do was to come up with some ideas, and we'll just do round robin with some of this and go over these ideas just to get that spark going. Because one of the polls that I put out not too long ago, the number two item out of either hiding a find, finding a hide, or creating a cache, the second most popular out of everything was creating a cache. which I found interesting. So let's kind of go over some of these. One of the things that I truly consider as a creative geocache is the ability to create wonder. There is a saying that came out of Doug Henning, which was a magician for many, many years ago. And the exact phrase that he uses, and I use this in geocaching terms, he said that the art of a magician is to create wonder. To me, the art of a geocaching creator is to create wonder. So it's one of those concepts where you go, do I just want to put that 35 millimeter or that pill bottle something here, or can I actually take this to another level and go that way? So to me, that's one of the things that I consider as being a creative geocache. What's your thoughts, gentlemen?
I mean, I totally agree. Go ahead, Corey.
And I was going to say, I'm the same way on that because, you know, when I first started geocaching, any cache was as good as the other. I mean, a lamppost cache was like, wow, this is incredibly cool. You know, I was ecstatic. But after the, you know, 25th lamppost cache, I was over it. You know, some people didn't even take that long. But, you know, after a certain amount of it, you know, what I really liked is when I got on the geocaching pages and you started seeing the creativity of what went into them as far as, you know, the details on the page, or what went into it as far as the details of creating the hide, or what went into it as far as the details of the adventure while on the way to the hide.
Absolutely.
You know, that was more attractive than just the spark of eureka, I found it.
Yeah, the right. Destination the adventure getting there as opposed to the destination. That's awesome. So with some of the other things too, I think just using good common sense with proper geocaching placement, it can be. I mean, I remember seeing YouTube videos in the past of people just throwing geocaches out the window of a moving car. I mean, really?
That's how the ET highway is built.
Yeah. And even then they took...
Honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
I don't know if White Wolf Dan or Clay Four listen to this podcast at all, but that's how they, you know, when a dear friend of mine asked them, how do you have the patience to put out 1,500 caches? You know what? We threw them out the window far enough. You know what? Anybody who's going to come out here is coming for the numbers. They'll find it.
Wow. Yeah. Not very creative. Sorry. Yeah. So, I mean, proper geocaching placement is, to me, everything. One, you're protecting the geocache from being muggled. Unless it's obviously out in the middle of the desert where you got to worry about scorpions and everything else. And two, to make it so that it is an interesting geocache to find because of the placement.
Yeah.
I mean, is crucial for things like that. Mm-hmm. Corey, yeah, go ahead, Chad.
I mean, that's one of the reasons I love caches that I have to climb to. So, you know, tree caches, caches that are up a vertical rock face, caches that even caches that are LPCs, but they're LPCs with a climb.
Yeah,
you know, those are really fun to do.
So they have it on the top of the lamppost, not necessarily on.
I've had to back up a truck with a truck rack and take the extended ladder, lock it up under the truck rack, and back it up to a power pole.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Just to get a magnetic cache off of a... It wasn't a lamppost, but it was a power pole.
Wow. Yeah. Jeez. Well, hey,
one of my favorites was called Soul of a Cacher. It's retired now because the utility pole that it was on no longer exists. It was a utility pole, and it was... You know, the two tennis shoes tied together, the soda tube down in the tennis shoe and thrown up there, so it was looped around the top, and you had to figure out that you either need to bring something to be able to knock it off of there, or you need to go out in the woods, find a long enough stick, get it off, which is what I did, get it off of there, and I threw it back in one try.
Oh, wow. That's just evil. That's just plain evil. Mm-mm-mm. Now, Corey, what's some of the examples that you have?
You know, on my, I'm gonna go with the one that I think is most crucial. When I put go big or go home, okay. When you got the space to place a fridge, don't put a stinking nano.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, when you've got the room, if you go out in the middle of the woods and it's clear and it's free, you're not going to have anybody out there, and you put a nano out there.
Yes, you deserve to go to hell. I'm sorry. It's just that.
No. Make something worth it, because, you know, I've been out there, and I mean, there's a place called Arizona's Largest Nano. And I love it. I mean, you drive upon this thing, and you drive out there a ways, and this thing is, the container itself is not huge, but the container itself that it's assigned to,
right,
is massive, and it's something that you don't even see until you drive upon it. I mean, and it's just it is crazy. So, I mean, utilize the space that you have. If you have a space, make it something that's going to be it's going to be memorable.
Okay, this is my version of a nano that I like. This is what they refer to as a mighty mega.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying. If you're going to put something out in the frickin' woods, or my ever favorite that I love with a case like that, is they put a nano in an area where you've got a set of trees, and in the bark, you could place it in one of probably 5,000 areas. And nothing will drive me crazy. The fun factor goes out instant. The second I walk up and go, if this thing doesn't have an arrow pointing exactly where this is, or if I shine a light and I don't see it, we're out of here, kids.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a I need to put it out, but I built a world's largest bison tube. Well, it's probably not the world's largest, but, you know, it's made out of PVC that's a 4-inch PVC and, you know, a good about 16 inches long.
Yeah, it's not the largest.
No, Corey.
It's not the largest, but it's, you know, it's a decent size. So, you know, going for a bison in the woods, that's a decent size. Got enough space in there that regular ammo can is equivalent space.
That's
just
got to
hang it upside down so that none of the water goes down through the threads.
Right. Now, Corey's got a good-sized bison tube, right?
My bison tube is, 6-inch PVC, about 36 inches long, and I can drop a small coffee can inside of it, and the way I did it is it still hangs right side up, but I drilled a few holes in the bottom so that the coffee can is, the coffee can acts as the internal container if it does get a little wet inside.
Yeah, at least the condensation's got a place to go. That's awesome. Mm-mm-mm. So, Taz, how about yourself? What's some of your ideas that you've got?
You know, I like interesting caches. I like things that are hidden in massive objects. Now, except for rocks. Now, you take one rock and drill at the bottom, and you hide it in a field of rocks. I want to smash your head. I'm sorry. I hate those. But, you know, there are, you know, some people love them, so, you know, we'll go on with that. But, you know, like one lock with on a fence with hundreds of locks, like the lovers locks on bridges.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. The bubble gum wall in Seattle is awesome. it smells a bit, but, you know, it was an awesome cache to do. You got, you know, millions of little pieces of bubblegum stuck on the wall in the alley there, and it smells like, you can imagine. But, you know, finding that one little piece of fake bubblegum that has the cash in it, you know, that's, when you do it, it's like, that is a real eureka.
Yeah.
And, you know, my second favorite is like hidden plain sight.
Yes.
Items where, you know, you're looking, and you're looking for what you think is a cash container, but if you actually step back and you look, you might see, hey, why does it say N1ST as the number for this electrical panel? Or not my first one. You know, that's one of my caches that I own personally. You might see there's one that has a friend of mine's got one that has a fence sign on there. And the fencing company, I think it was from like, not Australia, but, you know, it was from someplace that wasn't Houston, and a phone number that wasn't a Houston phone number. And when you finally notice that, it's like, oh, and you pop it open, it's a little magnetic, you know, two pieces clamshell together, but it's hanging there on the fence, and it's like, yeah, those are cool ones, I think.
Absolutely. This is one that I'm showing on here. This is literally, it looks like a light bulb. The fixture itself, or the base of it, the cool thing about this, as I screw this off, this is a salt shaker. So it's thick, it's heavy, and if you want to put your nano on the inside of the part, this fits perfectly into a light socket.
Ooh.
So this has some really good potential, and I can't wait to put this one out as being an evil. And the other one is Pinterest. I found one that is so evil, I've got to try it. Basically what they used was either they found an old hornet's nest and put and glued like the stuff for the hornet's nest onto like a one of the key holders. And then put it up someplace in a corner. That's who's going to look at that? You know, that's pure evil. I love stuff like that.
Yeah, I designed a model of a mud dauber's nest, and I 3D printed it, and got a bison tube, small bison tube in it with the magnetic backing, and put that sucker out there. Yeah. A lot of people don't. It's like, I'm not touching that.
And the other ones that I like with that too are the ones that you don't realize it's a geocache till it moves. That's I love that. I can't tell you how many times I've been sitting there contemplating about the geocache. I've got my hand up on the thing itself, and I'm going, I don't know where it is. And all of a sudden, you feel it's like, oh, come on. So, yeah, I love stuff like that. That's awesome. Let's see, some other goodies that we've got on here. Creative caches, again, do not necessarily have to be so sneaky. They can be cute. And what I mean by this is bring a smile on somebody's face. I have had several geocaches where I have literally laughed out loud, where you're out in the middle of the woods, and you're looking for the geocache. It's not particularly difficult, especially when you see the front of the gnome hole at the base of a tree has, you know, like a fairy door to it and a bunch of elves or gnomes hanging around at the front of it. It's just so darn cute. You can't help but laugh or smile. You could see it from 50 feet away.
Right.
Out in the middle of the woods, out in the middle of nowhere. Nobody's going to see this thing. And you just walk up to it and you smile. One, because you're relieved it's that going to be that easy to find it. But the other part is the creativity of what it takes for somebody to just take that extra step to make it that visually cool. I love that.
And I think that's why a lot of people like the travel bug hotels and things like that, because a lot of those are locked, and when you open them up, a lot of people take the time to do a lot of creative things like that, because out in the open, you always run the risk of somebody coming across it and trashing it and not taking care. But a lot of the travel bugs and travel bug hotel owners, they lock these things up, and some of them are massive. Like the one that's down in Yuma is just completely massive, even though it's not that creative, but the way that they have it sectioned out and structured is really cool, you know. But, you know, when you open these things up and they're really cool, like the one that Taz was just at, that's amazing, you know, to be able to see this and go, hey, you know, this is really cool. This is out in the open, and you can see it, but some people really don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Right. A person walking down the street would think, you know, it was just someone making this really creative giant birdhouse that has, you know, 9 or 12 birdie holes and stuff in there, and some fake birdies on the outside. And it's like, well, you know, that's kind of cool when you're walking by.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, as a geocacher, you go up there, it's like, and you
bingo!
Open up, like, bingo!
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's awesome.
Yeah. It really is. I love stuff like that. Anything that makes it that much more, like I said, just to bring a smile on your face, it just makes geocaching so much more fun.
I mean, one other thing, just even making making the container interesting. I've got a dear friend, Penny, who still lives down in southern Utah. She travels all over between California and Utah, and she's got, I don't know how many caches. She got over 1,000 hidden caches that she takes care of, and she has other people's maintain. But every single one of them has a different cache container.
Mm-hmm.
She travels. Mm-hmm. She goes out, and I said, man, I admire you because of just the commitment you have to geocaching. She goes, no, I admire you guys because you guys have a life. but she goes out, and she goes to the yard sales. She goes and thrift stores and just looks for ideas, and she picks up things that would make great cache containers. I mean, I found one of hers that was an old urn that she cleaned out as a cache container. She hid in the cemetery. I found one.
Oh, that would be sweet.
You know, and it was creepy. It really was creepy. I was scared to open this thing. I mean, it's just. It had the GX on it, so you know, it had the geocaching emblem on it, so I knew, but still, you come across it, you know.
Yeah,
that's one where you do look around, make sure nobody's looking before you open up the urn. And
wow, you're like, I love it.
Get out the dirt, get it out of there. So every one of hers has been creative and have had a little bit of story, especially, you know, she's tied the name of the cache to kind of what the theme was, and it's not, you know, everything's been a little bit different with her containers. You know, the inside might be just a bison tube or something like that, but the containers really made you go, it's made you smile, because you're kind of thinking, I bet I know what this is, but when you finally get across it and come across the container, you're like, oh, that's what that means, you know?
Yep.
So it's really fun hunting hers. I really like the hunters, and it's really cool because she's a great cacher, and if you can't find her caches, she doesn't want you to come waste all this time looking for them and go home.
Right.
Without finding it.
Yeah.
She says, call me. Don't be afraid not to call me. I want you to find this thing because I want you to enjoy it as much as I do.
Yeah. I love in series that people put out as well, because if I know that there's 14, 15, whatever the number is of geocaches in this series, if they've got a theme to it and they go and make the creative containers to go with the theme, I'm looking forward that much more to the next one I find just to see what the container is going to be. I mean, I love that.
I mean, it's something that I can share. You know, I try not to spoil too much for anybody else, but I like to take pictures of it so I can share my kids.
Oh,
so I can show my kids and my wife and stuff like that. I mean, I'm not going to blast it all over the cash page or whatever. But, you know, but I like to share it because it's nice to be able to share that adventure with somebody, because people have really taken a a passion to it, and they've taken their time out to it. Rather, you know, they could have just put a 35 millimeter can and just told just some history over something. But the people who've really taken and taken the time and created a cache to match the cache page to match a historical theme or something like that, or an adventure, it's really amazing. It's really fun.
Yeah. And go ahead, Chad.
And I always make sure I get the cache owner's permission before I blast it out to the world. So Bud's done working, when I was out there asking, hey, do you mind if I share the picture of this on a podcast with, you know, our viewers? And he said, sure, go ahead.
Yep, that's the best way to go. Yeah, and how many times have you gone to an event where somebody says, oh, you got to see this?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's the beauty of it. And, you know, there may be odds that somebody may want to go and find it or not, but a lot of times just to be able to share, to say this was so cool and this was why, you know, I had one when I was heading up towards Michigan where you were the maker of the circuit. So in other words, there's this large birdhouse, and on each side of the birdhouse was nails and screws and like little hooks and all sorts of stuff on each side. And the kicker is you had to figure out the combination. And when you hit both of the correct sides, you created the circuit through you that turned on a light inside that you had to look to get the final combination. It was gorgeous. And, you know, stuff like that, it's awesome to be able to do that. But yes, you get permission from the people before you dictate and put all that out. But, you know, if you find stuff, just don't give everything away in the picture. Just, you know, take it away from the spot. Make, you know, leave some things for the imagination to figure out.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah.
Yeah, usually if I post back on there, I'm posting back a picture of the log sheet.
Yeah, you
know, something like something innocuous.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, if you wanted to share,
or the environment,
it's great because you can even just shoot an email to the cache owner and say, hey, I'm really burning to share this with somebody. Can I share it? I mean,
yeah.
When I wanted to come in, I wanted to share the Tin Man with you guys.
Oh yeah.
I tried to get a hold of the cache. I still can't get a hold of him. He lives in Colorado. His folks own the farm and tend to the caches that are there. They're great people. They're nice. I haven't met them physically, but they wave at me every time I drive down the street, you know. But I haven't got a hold of the cacher himself.
Yeah.
And I've sent him I think I've sent him 3 or 4 emails, which he's never returned.
Yeah.
And so finally, after about a month and a half, I'm just like, if he gets mad at me,
Sorry. it's a judgment call.
But it's one of those that's sitting right on the side of the road.
Yeah,
I'm sure he wants it exposed.
Yeah, I mean a lot of the geocaches, if you look, they will either tell you right in the description, hey, this is what you're looking for. To me, if they're that if they're that descriptive and they say this is what you're looking for, it's over here, that's got a lot more fair game to be able to say to somebody. It's easier to show that. I mean, you will still try to get permission if you can, but in a lot of cases, if they're telling you right there in the page you're looking for a gnome hole in a, you know, such and such, that one, that doesn't bug me so much to try to share, because they're literally, it's wide open public view right on the page itself.
Yeah.
Let's see. Some of the other things that can be interesting. Now, Scott put this in, and it kind of goes with what I had. He put this in the show notes. What I had is getting the log out can be as much fun as finding the geocache itself. And what Scott wrote was puzzle caches, creative puzzle caches. The container can be simple, but exactly how you kit it out, the logbook out, can be completely creative. And he put a thing on here for GC30A2Q to check out. So I'm going to have to check that out later on and see what they've got. But he is exactly right. Getting the log out sometimes, holy smokes, Bullwinkle.
Yeah, you actually put out a video of that monkey cache you did.
Oh, yes. And you know what the funny part is?
That's what I was thinking. As soon as you said that, I was thinking that monkey cache that you
got. Oh, nothing like seeing There was a person there, two people with major PhD, or one with a PhD, another with a master's, two other guys that are high-tech individuals, and we're literally like monkeys ready to bang it with rocks to get this thing out. The funny part is the two Alexanders are good friends of ours that where we made the Monkey Cash fail video from. They actually had to go back like a month later and work that thing till they got it out and figured it out. And it's like, if I do go back, it's going to be in the winter because it was like, that was some serious swamp type woods. And oh my God. So yeah, I'm going to go in the winter when I'm not going to get eaten by stuff so much, but that's exactly it. Getting something out. Monkey caches are awesome. You can get creative with it. All sorts of puzzle caches, mystery caches, the ways that you've got to get things out. I mean, it's amazing. Electricity to water pressure to hydraulics to you name it.
Yeah, so some of my favorite are tube caches. You know, everything from magnetic to water to strings and pulleys to kinetic energy to motorized. And I love doing them, and I enjoy creating them as well.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the things that I put out, simplest puzzle cache I could possibly come with, was a 3 foot long, I think it was maybe a 3-inch, it might even been a 2-inch PVC pipe, capped at the bottom. The top had one of those elbows over it so it could, you know, not have the condensation in it and yet not get direct rain or anything into it. And it had a simple bison tube with the keychain at the on the end of it in the bottom. So it's 3 feet down, and it was put onto a pole so that you could reach up enough to touch the top to take the elbow off, but yet that was it. And the creativity of the geocachers of everything from bubblegum on a string to high-powered earth magnets on the side of it to move it up until, I mean, it just, the list was huge. And just something as simple as that.
Nice.
And Team Pugach in the chat room has mentioned an old cache that had been archived. It was a puzzle cache that had a rubber chicken and a guardrail. And the puzzle cache was about how the chicken crossed the road.
Oh, my gosh.
So, I mean, that sounds like that was a fun one.
Now, that's a theme.
Oh, yeah.
You had 12 options of where it was hidden. Those are fun, too. I mean, even for something as simple as a sign cache. We had one out here. I made a vlog of it a year or two back where, for some simple reason, this parking lot that never got built into anything had literally 30 red triangle signs, one right next to each, or red diamond signs, one right next to each other through this whole side. I mean, for like almost what seemed like a half mile. Just dozens and dozens of these reds. And the idea was simple. All you had to do is find I think it was a Nano that was on the back of it, and then pick a different sign when you put it back and watched it move. I mean, you know, that's kind of fun too. So it's it's not so mind-numbingly like, you know, a bison tube in a grapevine, but enough to make it a challenge where you're gonna have to work for this one.
Yeah, I mean, speaking about signs, I mean, it's just cool. I mean, I remember one that drove me nuts for a while because it was very simple. It was right by the coordinates drove me to a stop sign, and it was called period. And it just drove me nuts for a while.
End of a sentence, stop.
Huh?
I was just thinking, end of a sentence, stop.
Well, yeah. And I was thinking it, so I looked all over, and what they had done is they'd taken they'd make it a reflective magnetic period.
Right.
And stuck that right to the end of stop, so it said stop, period. And the cache was on the backside of that. So, yeah, I was looking all over the sign, all over the fence line where that was and everything. So, yeah, the sign actually had it. It was stop. You know, the stop sign had a period on it. And it just took me a while because I wasn't looking on the stop sign itself. I was looking at all the normal places.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
there was one out in Seattle that definitely got a favorite point for me. That was at a public bulletin board that had that was next to a park that had, you know, the usual other things like trash cans and benches and everything else around and all kinds of different places for a cache to be stuck. The cache was just a geocaching page pinned to the bulletin board.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing how, yeah, when a geocache gets there, when you hide something, you're thinking, man, this could be easy or this could be hard. And when somebody else comes there, I've been so open-minded to where I can say, oh, man, I see it. Or I've been so narrow-minded to where it's taken me 12 times going
yep.
there.
Oh, yeah.
And
yep.
the cache says, I literally walked up to it, signed the log. I was out in 5 minutes. And I'm like, I've been here for hours. I'm going to drag this guy. I don't know who this last logger is. I'm going to find him, hunt him down, and drag him back to ground zero. That sort of thing. But, you know, it's just one of those things that some of those where you just go, oh.
Yes, I was just going to say that. How degrading is that dough factor?
Oh, yeah.
When you actually make the connection, or how satisfying it is when you actually do find, when you've got a good yeah. fight and you've done it.
Well, magnetic letters on the back of a utility box.
Mm-hmm.
I copied that off of she's a good friend of mine now, a cashier up here, because I went there 5 times without finding it until my hand actually brushed across it, and you're like, but,
yes,
you know,
yeah, it's amazing. Mm-mm-mm. All right, we're just about there. Last thing that I would suggest, if you are looking for creative cache ideas, and I know the guys raise their eyebrows and then they go do it anyways, go check out Pinterest. Check out Pinterest. There are tons and tons. I was looking at one on how to make a log cache that I wish I had the bandsaw to do it, but it's literally step by step. How to cut the section out of the log, how to glue certain things together to make the drawer, and it's really nicely done. I just wish I had the bandsaw to do it. Just things like that. The hornet's nest idea I got out of there today. There's just tons of ideas off of Pinterest. Check it out because they're there. And if you're looking for something in the creative that you've never done before and just want some ideas, good stuff to go with.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
I mean, even though I don't really like Pinterest because, you know, it's – I don't know. Andy, did you get on there just because of Amy or –
No, actually, I've been told by quite a few people, and you want to – listen to something like that. When we advertise, I actually put our shows on Pinterest as well. If you believe it or not, it's the truth. One of the larger amount of hits for people to listen to either the Geocaching Podcast or the GeoSnippets Reboot Podcast comes from the hints off of Pinterest. That became one of my favorite fans right there in the social media. So, yes, we put our stuff
up. So, to all you Pinterest listeners, I apologize. Please do not listen to the previous. We love you. We love Pinterest.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. Absolutely. But, no.
I have to say, I'm actually working on a geocache. Current set of geocaches I'm working on came from an idea from Pinterest.
Yeah.
So, you know, when Pinterest first came out, I wasn't too happy about that. But, you know, now it's, you know, I can actually get some really good ideas off of it.
Yeah. So. All it takes is that spark, because no matter what you see in every video that I've done for GeoSnippets, I've always encouraged this as well. I will give the base idea for a geocache that either I found or I came up with or whatever. Take that and run with it. Take it,
yeah.
Take the idea mm-hmm. and make it your own and go and do things with it, and do the same thing with the Pinterest. Find some ideas and then really, really make it up. So, yeah, that's the best way to go. All right, guys, any final things, ideas, suggestions that you have that you want to bring out?
Don't hate Pinterest. Love them.
Absolutely. All right, folks, I think it's time to get on out of here. Thank you for stopping by and watching and or listening to our show. We greatly do appreciate it. Please consider becoming a patron and a supporting member for our show so that we can bring this stuff to you each and every week. And above all, please tell others about the Geocaching Podcast and let them come over and experience all the insights and ideas and craziness that we get into. And we won't even bring up Scott Burks. I'm just saying. So come on by and see us, and we love it when you do. Remember that July 31st, it is the 29th today, but July 31st, they've got a Find an Earth Cache or a Tennessee event. That's the next of the souvenirs, so put it on your list. September 2nd seems like, oh, so far away. Guess what? It's going to be here before you know it. Get ready. Get those souvenirs going and have a lot of fun out there doing those journeys and adventures when it comes to geocaching. All right? All right, folks. Thank you so much for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. And I think it's time to move on. Let's do this. Again, thank you for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. Thank you to Lisa from cache-advance.com. Please be sure to join us each and every Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time for another episode of the Geocaching Podcast right here on the Geocaching Podcast website at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. The video version of our show is available on YouTube, and the audio version is available on our home website, iTunes, Stitcher, and many of your favorite podcatchers. We love hearing from our viewers and listeners, so please visit us through our social media sites or contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. The Geocaching Podcast is a Head Hard Hat production and is produced by Andy Smith, Scott Burks, Corey Stevens, and Chad Courtney. This show is copyright 2015 by Andrew T. Smith. All rights reserved.